Hello, Joe. What do you know? Welcome to the Bogart Film Affair.
That's right, baby.
What's all the fuss about?
Relax, Jack. Have another drink.
It smokes, it drinks, it philosophizes.
You mind telling me what it is I'm supposed to have done? At this rate, I'll be 60 before you get to the point.
Welcome back. This is the fourth podcast in the Bogart Film Affair. It feels incredibly strange to record this right now. I did the first three episodes of the podcast two or three months ago. I had a light week, stayed after work, and in like 2 weeks had recorded and edited the first three episodes of the Bogart Film Affair, All Through the Night, The Return of Dr. X, and Beat the Devil. And then I spent the next couple months in my spare time, which isn't a ton of time, editing and putting it up online, finding out how to host a podcast online. I went through Podomatic.com and then getting it up on iTunes. And it's been a fun couple months. I've had quite a few hits on the podcast, quite a few listens, quite a few comments, which I'm enjoying greatly. So thank you, guys. I appreciate it very much. I wish it was more than every other week, but right now that's about all my schedule will afford, especially this week when there's one due Sunday, and it's like Wednesday night, very late right now, and I'm trying to get one out quick. Just to cover a couple quick things that people have brought up either on email or Twitter or whatnot. Yeah, I would love to do one weekly. I would love to do a weekly podcast. One of the first things I found out is how expensive podcasting can be if you want to do long podcasts for an extended period of time. You only get so much free space. Right now, if my numbers are correct, if my math is correct, and I know it's not because I was a horrible math student, I have about, you know, maybe 15 to 20 podcasts I can do before I start having to pay money to, you know, the host site to host this podcast. I don't really want to pay money. I was hoping this would be mostly free. It's not going to be. So that means I'm going to be stretching it out quite a bit. I'm going to, you know, post every other week, and I'm going to do my best to keep the podcasts under a half an hour because that'll help me maximize my time. I listen to a ton of podcasts. I subscribe to so many podcasts. I can't keep up. I end up dumping a lot of them before I listen to them. But I know personally, you know, if a podcast doesn't run at least a half an hour, it probably won't get subscribed to. So I'm going to shoot for 30 minutes on all of these. Something else that was pointed out, I spell bogey, B-O-G-I-E, which, as I understand it, is the way that the man who coined the nickname for Humphrey Bogart, Spencer Tracy, spelled it in a note, B-O-G-I-E. I know a lot of searches that lead to the website spell it B-O-G-E-Y. A lot of people ask me, why do you spell it B-O-G-I-E? Instead of B-O-G-E-Y, which, as I understand it, is the way you spell bogey in golf terms. Not a golfer. I consider, since it was coined by Spencer Tracy, I'm going to try to keep it to the original B-O-G-I-E. So anytime I refer to the Twitter account, it's at Bogey Film Blog, B-O-G-I-E Film Blog. The website is bogey, B-O-G-I-E, filmblog.wordpress.com. But the podcast is just the Bogart Film Affair, so no mistaking the spelling there, but just to clear that up for a few people. Man, this seems incredibly awkward to record right now. It has been too long, so we're going to get into it. So this week we're doing something a little different. It's not going to be your straight up, you know, film review, in-depth commentary, discussion like it usually is for the first three podcasts. One of the things I've noticed, one of the great things about having a blog on WordPress is it shows you exactly what people searched for in search engines to come to your website. And something really interesting that's happened is the number one search to the site is Humphrey Bogart or Humphrey Bogart Films. Bogart, his name is usually the number one every week. But every week, every month, and then for the last almost 2 years since I've been running the site, the number two term used to search to find the site is Peter Lorre. which has shown me that there's an intense interest in Peter Lorre in the classic film fan community. I know that my original post on Peter Lorre for the Usual Suspects portion of the blog was a huge hit and continues to get a lot of hits, where I summed up how many films Peter Lorre and Humphrey Bogart made together. One of the big things I noticed as I continued working on the Bogart film blog, where I went film by film through all of his movies, was that it was going to end sooner than later. And so one of the things I did to kind of stretch it out was I created what I called the Usual Suspects. And these were posts I wrote about regular collaborators with Bogart, actors or actresses, directors who did at least two or more movies with Bogart. You know, one of my original ideas on the site was to catalog every actor who's ever worked with Bogart and exactly how many films they worked with him in. That was an enormous task, especially considering that some of those films, you know, have nearly 100 people credited in the cast. I realized it would be, you know, more efficient and more interesting to take the bigger stars, somebody like Peter Lorre, who shared multiple roles, who's probably best known for working with Bogart, and catalog all the films that they did together. Another amazing benefit of working on the site is the people who've contacted me in the classic film world, both fans and professionals. And maybe one of the coolest things that happened came from a dumb mistake I made on the blog one time. I'm trying to remember what exactly the mistake was. I remember what it was. In writing Peter Lorre's biography for that original Usual Suspects post, I miscredited his first film. What I actually did was I credited a play that he was a part of. And I got this email from a woman named Cheryl, and Cheryl said, "Well, you've got this wrong. That wasn't his first film. That was actually a play that was recorded, and there are recordings available, but that's not really a film." And being the kind of narcissistic jerk I can occasionally be, I immediately fired back, "Well, you know, show me some proof or it's going to stay up, because this is what IMDb says, so who are you to tell me it's wrong?" Well, it turns out I you know, made that comment to one of the main researchers for Peter Lorre's biography written by Stephen Yunkin, and this woman's name was Cheryl Morris, and she was a major researcher on Stephen Yunkin's definitive biography of Peter Lorre entitled The Lost One. And what that led to was, you know, me getting the Peter Lorre book, which is massive and fantastic, and starting a conversation with Cheryl actually over something else on the blog, which was, you know, a supposed cameo that Bogart and Lorre make together in another film, which they don't actually make in that film. And our discussion of, you know, how that gets put on the internet or starts as a rumor, ends up on IMDb, and then nobody can ever get rid of it. And what that led to was a great interview for the Bogey Film Blog, where I got to talk to Cheryl and Stephen Yunkin, the author of Peter Lorre's biography, The Lost One. And the amount of stuff I learned just from talking to those two was fantastic. So this week, we're going to take a slight pause from the films, from Bogart's filmography, and we're going to talk just about Peter Lorre. This is going to be the Usual Suspects portion of the podcast, if that makes sense. Much like on the previous podcast where I, you know, read the synopsis from the Bogey Film Blog on each film that we covered, I'm just going to read you the brief bio that I wrote up for Peter Lorre on the website. And this is the post Cheryl Morris discussion where I, you know, adjusted and fixed the mistakes that I had made that she corrected me on, some of the misinformation that's on the internet. So this is from the Bogey Film Blog. Born in Hungary, Laszlo Lohenstein began his acting career by sacrificing everything he had in life to devote himself to the theater, eventually moving to Germany to study under playwright Bertolt Brecht. Brecht latched on to Lorre right away and knew how to use him, bringing the unique-looking actor much acclaim during their long and productive collaboration together. Adopting the stage name Peter Lorre in 1925, Lohenstein received his big break in the starring role of his second movie, playing a child murderer in Fritz Lang's M. When the Nazis fully took power of Germany in 1933, Lorre left, traveling to Europe and eventually arriving in London. His performance in the film M got him noticed by director Alfred Hitchcock and led to a role in Hitchcock's film The Man Who Knew Too Much. After working with Hitchcock, Lorre would make his move to Hollywood, where he found great success with his unique look and soft speech pattern playing an assortment of bad guys and shady characters. Lorre would go on to star in the Mr. Moto movie series, in which he played a Japanese detective in 8 different films. He also became a longtime collaborator with actor Sidney Greenstreet, making 9 films with the English stage legend. Lorre is perhaps best known, though, as the 5-time co-star and good friend of Humphrey Bogart. Bogart and Lorre left behind amazing stories of on-set pranks, drinking revelry, and a deep friendship, all of which continue to reverberate through Hollywood lore to this day. It was at Lorre's house where Bogart would sleep off many a drunk night rather than go home to face his third wife. It was also at Lorre's ranch where Bogart and Lauren McCall would hide away for weekend rendezvous when they needed to stay out of the limelight as they courted. And perhaps most famously, it was Lorre who gave this advice when Bogart fretted that he was too old for Lauren McCall. Peter Lorre told him, 5 good years are better than none. Having the opportunity to talk to Cheryl Morris and to Stephen Yunkin, go to the Bogey Film blog and read the interview. It's pretty lengthy. And then, you know, do yourself a real favor if you're a classic film fan or if you're a fan of Peter Lorre or Humphrey Bogart, and go get his book, The Lost One, which I think I got a copy through Amazon, is where I found it. But Stephen Yunkin did exhaustive research for years, starting in the 70s, starting with Vincent Price, who was a good friend of Peter Lorre. Yunkin got a contact to talk to Price and then ended up talking to Cecilia Levski, Peter Lorre's first wife. And then, you know, he continued on through family and friends of Lorre, even talking to people like Fritz Lang, who had cast him in that film, M, dives deeply into his time with Bertolt Brecht. I don't have time to go into everything on Lorre's life here, especially if I'm going to try to keep these podcasts under half an hour. I want to get to the films that he made with Bogart. But incredible, amazing life. Even more amazing when you consider how deeply he fell into drug addiction, especially morphine, and how many of his films he was just as high as a kite, self-medicating to fight, you know, some personal health issues and trying to keep that demon of morphine away while he did some amazing film work. He also did, you know, just fantastically amazing radio broadcasts, playing all sorts of characters. Unfortunately, typecast in the long run is kind of a creepy horror film villain. He didn't do a lot of horror films. He only did a few, and it's a testament to his acting ability that those are what stick in people's minds. But let's jump into the films, the 5 films he did with Bogart. We'll cover each one just a little bit, see if we can get the rest of them out in less than a half hour. I know I've taken up a lot of time so far and too much. But let's talk about the films of Peter Lorre and Humphrey Bogart. So it all starts with The Maltese Falcon, 1941. Lorre plays a character named Joel Cairo, who is a friend, an associate of Sidney Greenstreet's Casper, the Fat Man Gutman. And they're two men who are traveling the world trying to track down the titular Maltese Falcon statue that is worth, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, certainly possibly millions, I don't know. It's a priceless statue. And they come across, during their search, during their world travels, Detective Sam Spade, played by Humphrey Bogart. 1941, this is the first time that Bogart and Lorre collaborate, and it is, you know, arguably in the top 3 best films Bogart ever made. Certainly in the top 3, probably, of Peter Lorre. As far as I'm concerned, you know, Stephen Yunkin and Cheryl Morris might argue with me on that point, but based on a book by author Dashiell Hammett, what's, I think, most interesting to note here is that, you know, if you read the Maltese Falcon novel, Joel Cairo, Peter Lorre's character, is overtly homosexual. And, you know, of course, being the early 40s, Hollywood was pretty strict on anything that might be considered unsettling to the American filmgoer, to the American society, the American culture, anything unsettling to the American public had to be considerably toned down or even removed. And so any overt references to Lorre's sexuality in this film have pretty much been erased, except for his mannerisms, which director John Huston had Laurie play up quite a bit. There's a lot of, you know, it's tough to even talk about this without just sounding a little dirty. There's a lot of phallic use of Laurie's cane as he's sitting and talking to Sam Spade, especially in one scene. And, you know, there's a lot of stereotypical fussiness over his wardrobe and how he walks and behaves and acts as if he's, you know, it's a very early 20th century stereotype of what a homosexual would be. There's so much written about this film. It's the film where Bogart and Laurie really bonded as friends. Lots of backstage stories. One of the most famous is that Warner Brothers kept sending tour groups through the film sets, which was greatly disturbing to the director and to the actors. John Huston was not happy with it, and neither were Bogart or Laurie or Mary Astor or Sidney Greenstreet. So Bogart and Laurie would apparently cause a ruckus on set sometimes to get Warner Brothers to stop. And maybe the most notorious story is actually told two different ways in two different books. I tend to lean towards the Sperber-Lax Bogart biography for my definitive final answer for most Bogart stories. And in that book, the story goes that a women's club was visiting the set, had been given access to the set by Warner Brothers. And unhappy about this, Peter Lorre staged a scene where he was caught leaving Mary Astor's trailer while zipping up his fly and jauntily saying, "Bye, Mary," as if they'd just partaken in a moment of afternoon delight. And then you have Stephen Kampfer's Bogart biography, Tough Without a Gun. He credits the story to Bogart, that Bogart was in Mary Astor's trailer and not Laurie. Either way, it's a pretty funny story, a pretty funny event to stage to scare off unwanted visitors from a film set, and apparently it worked. Apparently after that, they stopped letting people just kind of tour through the movie set. It's hard not to watch this film and just recognize what an incredibly handsome guy Peter Lorre really was. He was at his prime. He was in excellent shape. His thick, curly hair is kind of slicked back. He's dressed to the nines, and he does an amazing job here, kind of playing Sidney Greenstreet's lackey, while at the same time being a threatening villain in his own right, with lots of wonderful moments with Humphrey Bogart, you know, either discussing the location of the Falcon or actually roughing one another up, fighting each other, pulling guns on each other. I would have to say this is probably my second favorite Lorre film. And if you're going to start with a Bogart-Lorre collaboration and you've never seen The Maltese Falcon, this would be an excellent place to start.
Shut up, sugar.
Later in 1941, the film All Through the Night is released, which we covered on episode 2 of the Bogart Film Affair, so I'm not going to go into it too deeply, but Lorre plays Pepe, the Nazi hitman who is undercover as a piano accompanist in a nightclub for Karen Vern, who he would later go on to marry. Lorre and Vern met on the set, apparently hit it off, and started a pretty intense love affair after this. It's a early 40s gangster war kind of spoof directed by Vincent Sherman, who I've also previously gone in-depth on the previous episode, so I won't jump into it again, but Lorre is really fun here. His scene where he's introduced to the audience is one in which he is humming as he walks down the street, eating popcorn, comes into a bakery and proceeds to kill the baker, who also happens to be Humphrey Bogart's favorite cheesecake baker in town. And Humphrey Bogart is a small-time racketeer in New York who then spends the rest of the movie chasing down Lorre and the rest of the Nazis in order to find out why exactly his favorite cheesecake baker was murdered. It's a film that I can watch over and over and over again and again and again. I could have it on a loop playing in my house. Bogart and Lorre don't have quite as much time together as they did in The Maltese Falcon, but both guys really, really nail their roles here, kind of mocking the genres that they'd both gotten a little bit famous for. Bogart certainly parodying his gangster persona, and Lorre having a lot of creepy fun with kind of the another sidekick villain role, but with a lot more humor thrown in. And if you're a fan of watching classic Hollywood actors smoke, this is the film where you watch Lorre and Bogart do the impossible, which is both of them have the opportunity in this film to do that cigarette smoking thing where the cigarette is hanging practically straight down out of their mouths, which I don't, you know, How many times did the cigarette literally fall out when they were smoking a cigarette like that? It is the coolest looking way to smoke I think I've ever seen on film. And on top of all that, it's a huge fun cast with Karen Verne and Conrad Veidt and William Demarest shows up. Frank McHugh's in this film. Jackie Gleason has a part. Phil Silvers has a part. And Bogey Filmblanc favorite Barton McLean has a part. You got to check it out. It's one of the hidden gems. Listen, I've gone into this before. I think it was episode 2. I talked about it a bunch. Go back and listen to episode 2 if you want to know more about this film. It's too good to pass up.
Oh, why, of course.
Then we jump to the year 1942. Now, there's two films that Bogart and Laurie are credited to have worked on together during this year. One of them is Casablanca, you know, what I would consider, and many consider, the greatest movie ever made. The other is a film that it's actually one of the myths that Cheryl Morris, the researcher on the Laurie biography, and I first got into discussion about. There was a film called In This Our Life, starring Bette Davis and George Brent, directed by John Huston. And as the myth goes, there's a nightclub scene in the film where supposedly as they were either dancing or walking through the nightclub, it's kind of a country roadhouse kind of feel, full of people, tables and tables and tables of people sitting around and drinking and talking and dancing. Supposedly, as kind of an in-joke in the film, Bogart, Laurie, Greenstreet, I think Mary Astor, Barton McLean. I don't know who. I can't remember who all exactly is attributed. But there's there was a rumor that some of Huston's previous actors all made a very brief cameo as the camera pans by sitting around a table together and talking. I didn't know it was a myth when I first watched the film, so I froze frame and walked through this scene in the Roadhouse nightclub carefully for an extended period of time. None of those guys are in the film. No Bogart, no Laurie, no Astor, no Greenstreet, none of them. It's a huge nightclub scene, so they easily could have stuck it in. There's some speculation that they did film the scene, but it was too distracting, and so they cut it out, or maybe it was originally in the original theatrically released film, and then they cut it out when it was eventually, you know, put onto VHS and DVD, or, you know, removed somewhere along the theatrical run of In This Our Life, but it doesn't happen. So even though it's listed on some pretty prominent websites as a cameo that's occurred, it did not occur. And if it did occur, it's not in the film anymore. Perhaps someday footage will show up of this amazing cameo of this cast from the Maltese Falcon all sitting around the table as a wink and a nudge to John Huston in this film, but it's not here.
Do you mind telling me what it is I'm supposed to have done?
Then we come to 1942's Casablanca, directed by Michael Curtiz and starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman and Paul Heinried and Claude Rains, Sidney Greenstreet, Conrad Veidt. You know, if you're listening to this podcast and you've never seen Casablanca, I don't even know what to say. There's obviously been some kind of mistake made. So I'm not going to go into heavy detail about Casablanca. We've all seen it. It's a classic. One of those endless loop movies you could have playing all day and never get sick of. Laurie plays Ugarte, a black marketeer who's, I guess I would say he's friends with Bogart's Rick Blaine in this film. They have kind of a tense relationship where they seem to not really like each other. Bogart seems kind of disgusted by Laurie. Laurie seems pretty conniving in his relationship with Bogart. It's pretty clear that he's using him for his own ends, but at the same time, there's this mutual respect that really seeps through both of their performances for one another. And, you know, according to the story, both Youngkin's book and I think it was the Lax Berber biography of Bogart, this wasn't a huge part for Laurie. He was only on the set for a couple weeks. If you've seen the film, you know, he's only in, you know, maybe a maximum of 5 minutes or less total, but it's a hugely impactful role. Supposedly, he had no idea what the overall power of this film was going to be. It was just another, you know, brief supporting role in a film for him to play, another paycheck, and then he was on his way. And, of course, you know, the film turns into this massive legend, probably Laurie and Bogart's best-known film, especially their best-known film together. And, again, you know, this film has so much written about it, so many fantastic backstage stories. Or, you know, behind-the-scenes stories, one of which is that Laurie would carry around a little eyedropper filled with water. And every time Michael Curtiz, the director, would turn around. Laurie would use it to put out his cigarette, you know, much to Michael Curtiz's anger of always wondering why his cigarette was out or unlit. You know, and although Laurie plays a bad guy here, it's not a menacing, threatening, gun-toting bad guy like we maybe are used to seeing him in other films. It's a very subtle, very menacing, pretty cut, sort of similar to All Through the Night, but it's like I said, he's not a hitman, he's a black marketeer, and there's this great moment in the film that kind of sets up the power of the transit papers that he's trying to sell, these transit papers that are going to get whoever owns them out of Casablanca. Rick Blaine, you know, thinks about using them with Ilsa, and Paul Heinried and Ingrid Bergman are both trying to use them to get out of the country. But Laurie gives them to Bogart for safekeeping. And in one of the really goosebumpy moments of the film, Laurie, as Ugarte, just gently puts his hand on the papers as he gives them to Rick and tells him, and I can't do a Laurie impression, so, and I'm not going to try, puts his hands on the papers gently, gives them to Rick and says, "Don't be afraid of them." Which is just a fantastic subtext-filled way to show us what kind of power these transit papers hold for every single person living in Casablanca, whether they want to use them or they want to stop people from using them. Again, you don't need my recommendation for Casablanca. You need to check it out. And think about this so far. These are the three films that these two guys have made together. The Maltese Falcon, All Through the Night, and now Casablanca. They are on a huge roll, Bogart and Laurie, in their collaborations. The films just keep getting better and better and better. The next collaboration between Bogart and Laurie would be 1944's Passage to Marseille. Again, a film directed by Michael Curtiz. Also starring a few regulars from Michael Curtiz and Bogart, Claude Rains, Sidney Greenstreet, and of course Peter Lorre. Lorre plays Marius in this film. And, you know, for the role that these two guys, Lorre and Bogart, were on, this certainly isn't a film that's up to par with The Maltese Falcon or Casablanca, but this is a darn good film, and a film that I truly enjoyed. It's the only film out of the five that Bogart and Lorre made together where the two of them play honest-to-goodness friends. They are in this together. They are prisoners on Devil's Island who escape to try to make their way back to France to help the French resist the Nazi invasion. And they get trapped on a boat going across the ocean with some corrupt French officers led by Sidney Greenstreet and a whole host of other, you know, sailors and officers who are, you know, a mix between friends and enemies. They're trying to have a cover story of who they are, that they're not really prisoners who've escaped. And maybe the most interesting thing about this film is that it's told through flashbacks, and not just flashbacks, but there are flashbacks within flashbacks within flashbacks. It's really well put together. And, you know, I would think any film student would have quite a bit of fun dissecting this one and trying to figure out exactly how the plot of this movie plays out so intricately between all the characters and all the different versions of the stories that they're remembering. And maybe my favorite scene most of all, because, you know, this kind of thing really didn't happen in any of their other collaborations, is there's a moment when there's Nazi warplanes attacking the ship that Bogart and Laurie are on, and the two of them man the on-deck machine guns to take out the Nazi planes that are strafing the ship with bullets. And there's a couple really fun moments where they're each on their own guns, and after they hit a plane, they'll turn and smile and wave to one another. And it's a camaraderie that you really don't get from their other four collaborations together, which I think marks this film as even more special. Their chemistry is fantastic. And again, we have some amazing behind-the-scenes stories with these two. Again, with Michael Curtiz, the eyedropper was back on set to extinguish his cigarettes, but also, according to Stephen Canfer's Bogart biography, Tough Without a Gun, Bogart and Laurie had a new trick up their sleeves where they would start telling jokes or anecdotes on set to stall shooting. And unbeknownst to Michael Curtiz, they would only stop horsing around when he would finally give them a laugh. And if he would just get mad or look at them straight-faced, waiting for them to finish, they just wouldn't finish until he laughed. And so they would stall and stall and stall, which they thought was hilarious, apparently. And Michael Curtiz was slowly driven crazy until he figured out what was going on and then realized, oh, the quicker I laugh, the quicker we get to finish this film. The very last film that Bogart and Lorre made together, 1953's Beat the Devil, which was episode 3, the previous episode to this one on the Bogart Film Affair podcast. So again, I'm not going to go too deeply into the plot, but Lorre plays Mr. O'Hara, a member of the criminal ring that is being led by Robert Morley and Humphrey Bogart, kind of at the same time, both very different personalities. Bogart the more cool and calculating, and Morley the more outlandish, mischievous criminal. And Lorre plays Mr. O'Hara, bar none. It has to be some of the best lines from Peter Lorre's career came from Beat the Devil. Truman Capote was hired by John Huston to write the script for this film. And there are just some amazing, very Capote-ish lines that come out of the mouth of Peter Lorre and Humphrey Bogart. And you know what? Since this film is the only one that they did that's in public domain, I'm going to play perhaps one of my favorite Peter Lorre lines of all time, a line that comes to me in my head constantly in life. It just seems like one of those truths that is so powerful, it haunts you for the rest of your life after you hear it in a film.
Time. What is time? Swiss manufactured, French hoarded, Italian squandered, Americans say it is money, Hindus say it does not exist. You know what I say? I say time is a crook.
You know, and those words, you know, quite powerful when you consider this is the last pairing that Peter Lorre and Humphrey Bogart had together, the last film that they made together. It's fun to note, you know, a lot of people point out that this Beat the Devil was a film that it seems odd that Robert Morley was used instead of Sidney Greenstreet because they both have a very similar build and acting style. But it's a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for me to see Lorre, you know, bounce his manic craziness off of somebody else besides Sidney Greenstreet for a change. And what's also fun to note is apparently Greenstreet and Lorre were great friends in real life, but Robert Morley was not a fan of Peter Lorre at all and referred to him as a tiresome little chap with a foul vocabulary that he had the misfortune to have to be around on a regular basis during the filming of this movie. Bogart and Lorre get, you know, some great scenes together, especially one in Bogart's hotel room, which has a very Altman-esque feel to it. Again, I covered a lot of this in the last episode. If you really want to know more about this one, check it out. I will say, to wrap up this portion of this film, it's a cult classic for a reason. It's not your typical early 50s film. It has a much more 70-ish film auteur feel to it. John Huston talked a lot about how he wasn't exactly sure what the tone of the film should be. There's a lot of interesting overlapping of dialogue or even drifting off mid-scene of dialogue that feels much more Altman-esque than Huston-esque. But it's a very entertaining film, especially when you realize that it's obviously meant to be heavy on the comedy and not so much the drama or a melodrama that might normally accompany a Huston or a Bogart film.
How good and kind of you to remind me.
So there's five films together. Bogart and Lorre, The Maltese Falcon, 1941, All Through the Night, 1941, Casablanca, 1942, Passage to Marseille, 1944, and Beat the Devil, 1953. Five films, which, you know, I have a hard time thinking of anybody else who collaborated with Bogart that many times with that many classic films. All five of those are definitely worth seeing for any classic film fan. And you know, to have the rich history that we do of the friendship that these two had together, the things they went through together, you know, the late night drinking and running around town. One of my favorite stories that Stephen Yunkin shared was apparently after an especially tough night of drinking, Bogart found himself wandering through the suburban streets near Hollywood and hungover and desperately needing caffeine. He knocked on a stranger's house and asked a woman for a cup of coffee. She invites him in. And he's sitting there talking to the family over breakfast, playing with her children. And who does he call to come pick him up but Peter Lorre, who just an incredible scene to imagine, two of Hollywood's biggest actors in a suburban family's kitchen, both probably, you know, a little hungover, a little tired from whatever happened the night before. But just to think that Laurie was the first one that Bogart would call for a lift, and that Laurie would just jump right over and pick him up and take him to the studio to be, you know, continue on with filming whatever he was filming at the time. And it's also interesting to note that Peter Lorre had his own troubles with the House Un-American Activities Committee, who was trying to root out the communists in Hollywood, who just gave Bogart a horrible time, Bogart and Bacall. But Lorre, you know, according to legend, there's the great story of, you know, they were going door to door to these famous Hollywood celebrities and saying, we need the names of everybody you've associated with who might be a communist. And Peter Lorre not wanting to name names and you know, definitely feeling the same kind of tone that he had received in Germany from the Nazis. Lorre's decision to fight was to give them a list of names of people who might be communists. Now, it was also a list of names of literally every single person he knew in the United States personally. So, you know, in the end, it was completely worthless to the committee. But it's pretty funny to think that, there's not much they could do about it. Pretty clever idea. I'm just going to give you a list of everybody I know. Yeah, there's probably some communists mixed in there. I don't know. I don't know who the communists are and who they aren't. Lorre wasn't. His politics were a little more conservative than that. But he certainly sympathized with the underdog, especially after escaping Nazi Germany.
How good. How true. How kind.
So that's it. That's episode 4 of our Usual Suspects podcast on Peter Lorre. And so to wrap up this week, I would ask you again, hey, if you have a moment, go on iTunes and give the Bogey Film Log a rating. Good or bad, I don't care. Apparently that's what gets you noticed on iTunes. Stop by the bogeyfilmblog.wordpress.com. And again, that's Bogey, B-O-G-I-E. I'm also at Bogey Film Blog on Twitter. Same spelling of Bogey. A little under the weather this week. I've been struggling with a cold for about 2 months. Also recording the podcast in a new room to see if that takes care of a little bit of the echo I was getting before. I was in a pretty big wide room before. I'm in a much smaller room now. I appreciate the support. Thanks, guys. Have a great week. Hopefully we kept this one under a half hour.
Oh, this is the end.